And it is a Thursday. That means it's time to talk to the voice of the undefeated Kansas Jayhawk football team. That would be Brian Haney. Brian, that has a good ring to it, doesn't it? 3-0?
And it does. 3-0 for back-to-back years for the first time since 91-92, back when Kwame Lassiter, the original, was playing here. So exciting to think about how far we've come, and yet, obviously, to keep this trajectory upward, games like Saturday are the types of games you want to prove you can win. So a lot of opportunity still knocking, but to think that this team is 7-0 in the month of September, the last two seasons, and chance to go to 8-0 and then head down to Austin, Texas, where this trajectory all got started 2 years ago. Pretty amazing to think how far they've come.
It is interesting that you mentioned 1992, because this popped up on my Twitter feed today that the last time that KU played BYU in football, and KU is going to play BYU coming up, Big 12 opener on Saturday, pregame at 2 o'clock on Z96.3 Lake, BYU also undefeated at 3-0. You got to go back to the 1992 Christmas Day Aloha Bowl. Chip Hillary was the quarterback, and KU won on a 48-yard field goal, 28-20. Glenn Mason was the head coach. I remember watching that game. I would have been very young, a teenager. Oh, those were the days. I remember watching that game. It was a very tight, competitive game. Glenn Mason had KU really rolling. And oddly enough, back then was the last time that they were going back-to-back seasons 3-0. And I was like, wow, it doesn't seem that long ago, but it actually was 30, 31 years ago when KU and BYU last met, and it was in a bowl game.
Yeah, crazy. I was, I think, 11 at the time, and I remember watching that game with my dad and thinking, oh, okay, so this is what a bowl game is all about. Like, I had no idea what college football bowl games were until that one, and then obviously it took 3 years for Kansas to go back again to the Aloha Bowl. But and then between 95 and 03, there was a bit of a drought there through the Terry Allen era and all that. But it needs to think that, you know, here we come full circle in these two programs that haven't met up in a long time. But you look at BYU at the time since, they've been to 40 total bowl games, not in that stretch in between, but 40 in their program history. And they've had an interesting path to becoming a Big 12 school. They were most recently in the Mountain West, but for the last dozen years, they've been an independent. And they've racked up, you know, some of the most success of any program in America during that stretch. I mean, 18th in wins during that stretch nationally. So this is not just a national brand based on the popularity and the alumni base of the school, but this is a really successful year-in, year-out program. But to me, in that first round of conference additions, I'm not talking about Utah, Arizona State, all that. I'm talking about the original Bob Bowlesby moves. I mean, BYU probably adds the most in terms of viewership, cachet, just prestige, all that. Of those original four of UCF, Cincinnati, Houston, and BYU. So I, for one, am really excited that we get to host them for their first Big 12 game. And I think that, you know, it's one of those wins. If you get it, it looks awesome because this is likely a bowl team. And they did just win in Arkansas with a great 17 straight points to close out the game versus the Razorbacks. But this is going to be definitely, you know, a super tough test. Arguably our toughest yet, tougher than Illinois. So can't wait to see what it looks like. But a lot of things to be impressed by with this program for sure. And I think probably the best word to put on it would be consistency. They're number 8 in total wins over the last 50 years, 20th in bowl invitations all time. And I think you're going to get that level of consistency year in, year out of the Big 12 Conference as well. So excited for their addition to the league and excited for new friendships and opportunities to meet new people. And, gosh, it's really cool what they're doing. Their BYU TV, which is similar to Longhorn Television Network in terms of popularity and reach and all that, they pick a local charity to contribute to, and they come in. And in this week's case, they're doing a book drive for all of their fans that are making the journey to Lawrence. They can donate to support a local cause. And they also spotlight other local organizations, and they happen to pick my pediatric cancer organization, the Rock Chalk Roundball Classic. They flew out here, Wade, in July with a 6-person camera crew, interviewed 5 people about the Roundball Classic of all things. So I'm really impressed with this athletic department, this football program, this alumni base. I just think of all the additions we've made, this might be the best one of the whole bunch.
Yeah, it sounds like it. That's very, very cool that they went and did all of that. We're talking Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you as always every Thursday by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Millen Beloit, or call them, 738-5701. We'll get back to BYU, a little bit more detail in a moment. I want to go back to the win last Saturday night into Sunday morning. Late start time, first road game. You know, the concerns I had when we talk about the game and broke it down Friday after we had you on Thursday last week was, you know, Kansas should win this game. They're a 28-point favorite. That's hard to cover spreads that are that big usually in sports. I had a little bit of concern as to, you know, the late start. Obviously, that's not normal, starting that late. And then on top of it, your first road trip of the year. So those are the two things that stood out to me, that maybe KU would come out a little bit flat possibly. At the end of the day, they never trailed. And every time Nevada tied the game or every time they scored, it seemed like Kansas had an answer, which is certainly a positive to take out of it. But I want to touch upon this, and it really – I mean, I was kind of thinking the same thing, and that is, I heard Lance Leipold say, and we played the sound this week, about embracing the W's, that we better embrace the W's. They're not all going to be pretty. They're not all going to be, you know, exactly how they're supposed to go in people's minds. Embrace the W's, and as you mentioned earlier, first time they're 3-0 back-to-back years for quite some time. I agree with him 1,000%. I think it's very easy for the bandwagon fans now to jump on, and then they'll jump off as soon as the wheel is broken instead of sticking around to fix it. And the real diehard KU fans understand that this is where we're being rewarded for being with that team through the down times and seeing what Lance Leipold's done in a short time. I thought it was a really good point. I thought it was a shot to a message to the fan base, in particular those that are might be a little bit more fickle, and that is you need to enjoy this stuff. It's not like this has been happening a lot over the last so many years.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, believe me, that was an astute observation. That wasn't something a coach that barely escaped in yes. Reno says just to save face. That's a coach who understands the depths from which this program has climbed. And even though he wasn't here for any of the decade that we spent winless on the road, he knows the history. I mean, it was a decade. So, you know, any road win, no matter who it's against or where it comes, you know, should be one that we're proud to get. And you're right. I think that I didn't fully appreciate the late night factor until I saw the way we came out. I mean, you really start to dive inside of it. Our guys practice every day at 8:30 in the morning, which means they're in the facility at 7:30 in the morning. And if that game kicks at 9:30 p.m., even though the team prepared by having them active throughout the day and the week leading up and doing things physically to keep them involved, they weren't going to change their entire practice schedule and start practicing at 8:30 at night just because of the flip. That would be wild with their class schedule and all that. But I think it really was a factor. And I think the other, you know, understated reason as to why it was a close game was, boy, when Nevada lost to Idaho 32-6 the week before, everybody in their fan base, everybody that was talking about this game heading in this week, was just kicking them while they were down, saying, how bad are these guys?
Yep.
You know, I was talking with one of their media members who said, we haven't won a football game since the Queen was on her throne. And he was actually factually in that. It had been 378 days. And stuff like that, where they're just, you know, down and out, I think they really bowed up and responded with a really impressive showing. So you add those two factors together and you can see why it would be a tighter game than any of us would have called for. But the bottom line is, KU made plays late when they had to. They were a little unlucky that you force five fumbles and you don't recover one of them.
Yeah.
Coach and I talked about that on Hawk Talk last night. It's an oblong-shaped ball. You don't know which way it's going to bounce. Percentages would tell you if you force five fumbles, you should probably get at least one, maybe two. And if you're fortunate, three or four, and they didn't get a darn one. You know, just one of those takeaways probably makes it a comfortable margin by, you know, two touchdowns, and we're not sweating the last possession or anything. But you certainly don't want to allow Cinderella to hang around late, because as we're seeing more and more in college football these days, had Nevada actually been able to go down and score, they probably would have gone for two
yes.
to go for the outright win rather than trying to keep up with Kansas in overtime. And so that's where, as the Jayhawks transition to some games now where they get to play the role of favorites, including this week, And maybe surprisingly so to the margin that they are, you know, you need to handle your business to where you don't allow these teams to stick around within one score late? Because you've seen kind of a shift in philosophy in winning here and now for underdog teams. And that's something David and I were both getting a little tight around the collar thinking about as that game crept toward the late stages of the fourth quarter. But thankfully, Kenny Logan made a big TFL, one of 2.5 on the night for him, and they sew up the game. But survive in advance, we use that term all the time in March. I think it was appropriate for last Saturday night, and hopefully we get another one of those this week. Because, man, if you can hold serve as a considerable favorite this week, I think considerable, I mean, more so than I realized we would be, then I think this Kansas team has to feel really good about its opening month, no matter what happens in Austin. You'll head down there as a ranked football team. It'll be one of the most talked-about games in the country, and you'll have a chance to really do something special at that point. But in order to get all that, got to find a way to hold serve against, like I said earlier, arguably the best team we've ever faced these first 4 weeks.
I'm interested on your observation, and if you saw the same thing as I did watching the game, is that Jalen Daniels, I thought in the first half he was trying to do too much. I thought he was trying to make the big play a little too much. And then in the second half, I thought he really settled down and played very, very well. And then Quentin Skinner, I thought had an outstanding game, a couple outstanding catches, one in particular that I think might have been a third down play. You know, we see, and I see this with my youngest kid throwing the football around, and it's, I think we get caught up in watching the Patrick Mahomes and the Lamar Jacksons or whoever it might be that are able to do things that really aren't fundamentally sound because they're so athletic, right? Like dancing in the pocket forever, and you're able to somehow avoid the rush, and you can buy, you know, 7 seconds of time and then chuck it down the field for a big gainer. And I think, you know, even kids in college that play quarterback and then high school and even, you know, youth football, I see this as well, that they watch this so much and it's almost like, well, you know, he can do that. I think I can do that. And if you do it once, then you think you can do it more often than once. And maybe it's a fluke, maybe it's not. And Daniels, I'm not trying to be critical, he definitely can keep plays alive, and he's made some amazing plays by keeping plays alive. But I did feel like in the first half there was, I think there's one play in particular where he took a gigantic loss, and that's one of those where you just have to take, you know, throw the ball away. And it's tough to do when you're a competitor and you want to make plays. But did you see something like that too?
Yeah, that's actually exactly almost verbatim how we described it on the broadcast, and it's not critical, it's constructive. And I think, you know, we probably hold JD to an unfair standard because he is so outstanding. Mm-hmm. He looked down at the end of the night, he was 21 of 27.
Yes.
And just did a lot of great things for Kansas. But David Lawrence, my color analyst, calls it hero ball.
Yes.
When you try to do the Patrick Mahomes play. And the hard part is, fresh in Jalen's mind a week before was a play versus a much better Illinois defense where he scrambled with his feet, mm-hmm, about 35, 40 feet to the right to extend the play, extend the pocket, and then chucks it 48 yards downfield, and they complete that play to Luke Grimm, play of the day. We have that fresh in all of our minds, but I think in Jalen's mind, you know, that just furthered the point that he can make the impossible happen when sometimes, and I talked to Andy Kotelnicki about this, I talked to Lance about this, sometimes the right decision is just to step up in the pocket, check it down to a running back. At the play you're talking about, I think it was 3rd and 25, and it wound up being like 3rd and 35,
yeah,
running out of the back of our own end zone because he takes a 10-yard sack. Check it down to the running back, gain 12 yards of field position, cut your losses, and then have a much better punting scenario than a minus 10 play. Or I thought there were multiple times in that game, and we may have talked about this heading into the game too on this very report, that knowing they were going to send the house, but knowing that they were really vulnerable to the explosive play, if you look at their film from the Idaho game, if he just stepped up in the pocket,
yeah,
and chucked downfield instead of dancing around back there and trying to go laterally, because many times that results in a negative yardage play. And I just think sometimes he was looking for the absolute home run when taking a opposite field single to drive in a run, so to speak, is a much more high percentage play. And, you know, Lance said that. Offensive coordinator said that, and it's, again, not being critical at all. It's just part of the evolution and development of one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and Jalen gets that, and yet at the end of the day, he still had outstanding numbers. So, but those are the types of plays that if it happens in the long time, like second half at Texas or even this week, and you have, you know, a 25-yard swing on a play where you could have just checked it down, gotten out of dodge, or instead you take a sack and suddenly you're punting out of your own end zone. I mean, that could swing the balance in a game. That gets you beat. So he's going to understand that. He'll be fine. But when you have an amazing arm and you have escapability like he does, and you look at these guys on Sunday like you described, Jalen Hurts, Patrick Mahomes, etc., you can't help but try to emulate that. I think that's what was going through.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Brian Hayden, the voice of Jayhawks, brought to you as always by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Midland Boulevard. Call them at 738-5701. A sellout for this big game against BYU coming up on Saturday. Once again, pregame at 2 o'clock on Z96.3 The Lake. You're home for the Jayhawks in North Central Kansas. All right, so give us a little bit of a scouting report on BYU. I watched a little bit of the game against Arkansas, and what I saw was they have good receivers, a solid quarterback. They look like a team that, you know, can be explosive on offense. When you look at BYU, what concerns you the most going into this matchup?
Well, I think it'll be won or lost in the trenches. I think that they're big and physical, and that they play, sounds cliche, but hard-nosed, gritty football, and that's where Kansas needs to have a much better game. The KU O-line, I thought, probably had their toughest showing of the season versus Nevada, not just with some of the penalties, but the protection at times wasn't as good as it has been. And so I think it's so critical. And you referenced the quarterback. I think the quarterback matchup is maybe one of the most intriguing ones in the country this week, because Slovis, for folks that don't know, he started his career as a USC Trojan.
Mm-hmm.
Then he went to Pitt. Now he's at BYU. He has over 10,000 career passing yards. He gets 72 career touchdowns. You're talking about two of the most accomplished veteran quarterbacks, and they're a little bit different in how they go about it, but the one thing that's the same is excellent decision makers. Both are great with the deep ball. And I think that, you know, that they've been around long enough that these are winners, man. They know what it takes. And so to have a big time, I mean, these are two guys that could be, you know, Big 12 Player of the Year contenders. Obviously, JD was the preseason Offensive Player of the Year. Slovis will be considered for Newcomer of the Year. But you look at his second game in a BYU uniform, and he accounts for 5 total touchdowns, 350 yards. Sound familiar? I mean, these are Jalen Daniels type numbers. And
yeah.
So I think that's one area that I'm really excited to see. And then just one quick storyline for you. We talked a lot 2 weeks ago about Quentin Lassiter with the interception, and his brother Kwame from the Cincinnati Bengals is right there. Well, his other brother, Darius, is actually a receiver on this BYU team. And so really special that their mama's going to get to be in the stands and watch their boys play. And I think, you know, who knows if they match up on each other, but it is a DB versus a receiver. But look for that when it happens. I think for those that don't know the full story of their father, you know, tragically passing away way too early in life, that's going to be a special moment if they do get matched up on each other. And, again, you love to circle those as well. It may not, you know, have a huge say in the balance of the game or anything like that, but keep your eyes on number 5 for BYU and number 8 for Kansas. And there'll certainly be a special embrace whenever the game's over, but they may be locking horns for 60 minutes before that.
Should be a great atmosphere. Sellout crowd, KU, BYU, coming up Saturday, kickoff at 2:30. All right, time for the off-the-wall question from Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks. I've been seeing more and more on this on social media, and I don't know if this is becoming a problem or if it's been a problem for many, many years. And it's just that we see these pop up now almost every week when it comes to college or pro football, and that's fights in the stands. Unfortunately, there was a fan that died because he hit his head on the concrete and involved in a skirmish or a fight. I remember the first Chiefs game I ever went to. We happened to sit in the upper deck, and my son, as you know him as Miller, I think he was 6 or 7, and there was a fight that broke out not too far from us. And it's just like, okay, too much booze, whatever else it might be. And you're like, seriously, this, I mean, we're here to have a good time, but not like that. That's not really having a good time, in my opinion. So that's the serious part of this, to set it up. But in a little bit lighter sense, Brian Haney, have you ever been in a fight in your entire life? And if so, how did it end?
Wow. That's a great question. I'm trying to think. I remember being like super young, like 7 or 8 years old, and having a skirmish playing soccer in a cul-de-sac at my aunt and uncle's house, and getting punched in the gut and not knowing what to do with that. But you know, it's funny. I actually have a much better story than that.
Okay.
And hopefully we'll make a promo out of this. but gosh, just maybe 5 years ago, we were out on the road, and we met up with a group of UFC fighters.
Okay.
And we were having drinks with our broadcast crew and some of these fighters, men's and women's UFC fighters. And I was fascinated by this because I watch a little of that stuff, and you know, it's a foray I would never journey into. I'm just not that athletic, nor am I that tough, quite frankly. But there was one particular fighter, who female fighter, who was telling me, oh, you know, it's not that hard. You just got to know how to spar to start with, and then you can advance to the full-on fighting and all that. So anyway, she decides that she's going to teach me how to spar, and there's like this rhythm to the right hook, left hook, jab, cross, you know, all this stuff, and I'm supposed to, almost like a much more aggressive game of patty cake, I'm supposed to mirror where her hand and her punch is going, and she goes through this like six swing routine, right? But hey, you know, we each had a beverage on our system at that point. There's a group of people standing around. Maybe my concentration wasn't as good as it should have been because she went like a cross uppercut when I thought she was just going to do a jab, and I put my hand in the wrong place, and she hit me right in the rib. And I don't know that I cracked the rib, but I actually ended up seeing my doctor about it. And he, without taking X-rays, he's like, "Yeah, you may have like a little minor fracture in there where your breathing's going to be wheezy for a while. You know, 6 to 8 weeks, you'll be fine," or whatever. But I took a punch from a UFC fighter, a female one, and she brought it strong. But it was not in a fight by any means. It was a playful, hey, let's teach these broadcasters. And it's funny, David Lawrence and Steve Kincaid were supposed to go next. And once they saw what happened to me, they were like, no, I think we're good. To this day, I still think my hand was in the right place, and she crossed me up just for a laugh. But,
could be.
Yeah, it was a good time until I couldn't breathe for about a week.
I thought,
as a broadcaster, when you dig deep, you need the air in your lungs.
Yes.
To belt out a call. You go, oh, geez, that's a little painful.
That story went a different direction I thought it was headed, because I thought you were going to say you're doing the patty cake thing, you know, and she was telling you which order to do this or that, and you got crossed up and you accidentally punched the fighter, and that caused a bit of a skirmish. I thought that might be where you're going.
No, I would never do such a thing, but I make for a pretty good punching bag sometimes. She landed a pretty significant one. No gloves on, but she wasn't just going through the motions. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
So the damage was done.
Well, made you appreciate, you know, what they do and how good they are at what they do. I'm sure of that as well. Well, hopefully no punches thrown coming up on Saturday and everything is clean. Should be a great football game. BYU and Kansas there in Lawrence with pregame at 2 o'clock on Z96.3 Lake. Brian, have a great call, and it should be a terrific game. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Looking forward to it, buddy. Thanks as always. And can't wait to have your son Miller on campus tomorrow for an official visit. We may have to get him down here now at Field House and walk him through the 64 conference championships, 6 national championships. Hardly anybody says no when they come down that hallway and see all that stuff. So that might be part of my plan to steer him this direction.
He would absolutely love that. That would be great, man. Thanks, buddy. Take care, as always. Brian Hayden, the voice of Jayhawks, brought to you each and every Thursday by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.